Hello everyone, welcome to Star Screams Ghost, a Transformers podcast, your episode-by-episode podcast guide through the classic Transformers Generation 1 cartoon, the Japanese Headmasters continuity, and now the Energon Universe comics continuity. I am Jeremy Graves, and of course, joining me as we delve into the third issue of the Transformers comic as part of the Energon Universe is my good friend, Mr. Andy Hanley. Good sir, how are you doing? And are you looking forward to discussing issue 3 today?
Yeah, I'm doing very well. And yes, I'm very much looking forward to it. I was going to pithily refer to this as like Cliff Jumper's bad day, but like actually pretty much everybody has a bad day in this issue. So like, I'm not sure I can single anybody out.
Yeah, a lot happens in this issue, it turns out.
Yeah. It's very much, I was going to say a continuation of some of the themes we've seen thus far, but I'd say it's actually a massive escalation of some of those themes. Like, yeah, things are in a pretty bad spot by the time we get to the end of this issue, as we'll delve into. But yeah, like there's some pretty dire straits to be found within these pages.
Indeed, and worth mentioning that if you are a first-time listener of the show, thank you very much for giving us a chance. We hope you enjoy our discussion. If you want to hear us discussing the first and second issue of this Energon universe, I encourage you to go back into the podcast archives because we have individual podcasts for both of those, and the issue 1 podcast also has a little delving into Void Rivals issue 1. Two. We're going to be saving all the housekeeping until the end of the show, but if you want to jump forward to any point in the podcast specifically, make sure you look in the description of the podcast. We've got chapter markers there with time codes stamped accordingly for you. So Andy, today we are delving into issue 3 of Transformers from the Energon universe. We're going to be, as usual, using the TF Wiki to give us a synopsis and to delve into a bunch of notes and stuff after the fact. But I did want to, first of all, draw your attention to the cover of this issue, which you could find being used as the podcast art today for those of you listening, or if you're watching on YouTube, it will have been the thumbnail image. Andy, this art that's been used for this issue of the comic, it's Soundwave, Rumble, Laserbeak, and Ravage trying to destroy Optimus Prime. It is fantastic.
Yeah, it's a really awesome piece of artwork. And the thing, I lost my mind when I saw like the cover reveal for this issue. And the reason for that is that I am very, very sure that this is also an homage to one of the early UK comics artworks. I think I remember it from, like, they did, like, a hardcover collected works of some of the early issues. I think it's maybe some of the early, like, US issues, actually, they bolted together. But I think it was actually also used as the cover to the very first issue of the UK comic. And that is a picture of, it's basically Optimus Prime and Soundwave, like, in space fighting. And the way Soundwave is gripping Optimus Prime's gun is identical to that image. The general posing of those two characters is identical to the way it is in that original UK comic, and it feels like a very clear love letter to the start of the Marvel UK comics continuity way back in the day. Like, you didn't have like Ravage and Rumble, etc. in that shot. It was literally just kind of Soundwave and Prime fighting, but everything about this just kind of screams of just like, yeah, okay, you had that comic as well and also thought that artwork was awesome. Because again, that was one of the things, I think, when I first started getting into Transformers, that was one of the artworks I would just sit and stare at because it was just so cool. And, you know, like, Soundwave and Optimus Prime both look pretty rad at the best of times. And kind of, yeah, this particular shot of them fighting, like, that was this sort of cover art was just amazing. So kind of seeing that sort of, you know, given a new look and a new vibe for this was just a, like, yeah, this is good. Like, this is saying all of the right things to me.
In short, you're in.
Yeah, exactly.
So let's get into what occurs in this issue specifically. So we found out at the end of the last issue that Danny, who was the work colleague of Sparkplug, who had been killed at the end of issue 1, we found out that it turns out Danny was Carly's father. So we pick up from where we left off there. Learning her father has been killed, Carly asks Sparkplug how it happened, and Sparky tells her that he was crushed by a giant robot. Carly realizes it must have been Starscream and begins to tell Sparkplug about her and Spike's discovery of the Ark. Sparkplug desperately asks where Spike is when they are attacked by Laserbeak. And Andy, we need to draw attention to this immediately because the panel of when Laserbeak breaks through the wall, the window, the house, whatever it is specifically, it is so dynamic. It is so damn good. I encourage people to really go out of your way to find this panel because it is brilliant.
Yeah. And there are so many of these kind of strewn across the issues that we've talked about thus far. But this is another really good one. This also prompts a thing that I don't think I have talked about here, about like how well it uses like sound effects, like dynamically within this. Like I always have a lot of respect for a comic that puts its sound effects out there. Like there's a big crash written on this, but it's done in such a way that it really like, it's not just telling you that there's a crash noise. It's not just, it's kind of diegetic. It actually adds to the feeling as well as just like telling you the sounds, in a way that's really nice. And like on the other end of that, I forget what like sound effect it is that's used when like Optimus Prime like puts down that deer that he treads on, but there's just this really tiny gentle like place, I think it is, and it's just place. And it's just like, it's really, I always really appreciate the art in itself of like using sound effects to kind of accentuate a panel, and this is a really good example of that.
We see Sparkplug firing at the robot bird only to get tossed around the room for his efforts. Laserbeak then corners Carly, but she is rescued by the timely arrival of Cliffjumper, who delivers a swift kick to Laserbeak's face. And it should be noted as well, Andy, from early on, and no doubt this will come up in the TF Wiki synopsis in a few moments, but Cliffjumper was specifically told, stay back at their current quarry base to protect their friends. So it took one issue and he's already disobeyed an order from Prime.
Yeah. I'm also really liking the other angle of this, that is just the kind of like fast friendship between Carly and Cliffjumper, of like the dynamic between those two, like from the previous issue where she just kind of chews him out to be like, what, you're scared of me? Is like, let me tell you. And like him just being like, oh, okay, you're all right, fine. And like clearly just like a respect has grown up straight away from that, because yeah, he's very much just like, nah, I just want to make sure you're okay, so I figured I'd come along, and here I am just bending Laserbeak's neck in a way that is, Laserbeak's neck should not do that.
Metal as a whole should not do that.
Yeah, like again, like talking about good artwork, it's like, yeah, that's gonna hurt. Like I feel like, I mean, Laserbeak never really gets on the receiving end of like physical violence for the most part, because he's usually flying around. Like I feel like this is the first time I've ever just seen him get a kicking, literally, and it's kind of quite a sight to see.
It's a really dynamic panel. So Cliffjumper then approaches Carly, however Sparkplug yells at him to get away before we then see a panel, well, it's actually that very panel, come to think of it, of Sparkplug just holding a shotgun up to the head of Cliffjumper. This is, I mean, we've talked about the tonal shift compared to other things we've covered, Andy. We've talked about various themes going on. This is, as in some ways, as raw of emotion as we get in, across these first three issues as a whole. This kind of sums it up in a very big way.
Yeah. I mean, again, there's so many good things about this. Again, talking about things that look cool. Dude holding a shotgun one-handed, I will always find that cool. Again, just the dialogue, like there's no need for exclamation marks, he's just like, get away. And it's just like, it is so like firm and forceful. And then yeah, for not, this will not be the last time Cliffjumper gets shot, but yeah, spoilers, Cliffjumper gets shot.
So, to carry on with the synopsis so we can discuss that in due course, Carly tries to get him to stop, that being Sparkplug, but Sparkplug pulls her into the police car he commandeered and they drive off. Now, the one part I didn't forget to mention, Andy, is that he pulled the trigger on the shotgun. Mm-hmm. Like, literally just shot Cliffjumper square in the side of the face. And the panel, the drawing in the comic is he's basically just sent sideways because it was at the side of his head, and just the big sound effect of boom. It's, again, such a dynamic thing. But then him getting away in the police car, which, again, kind of looks similar to Prowl in some ways and whatnot. It's got that vibe about it. Not exactly, but we're getting there. It again, it's adding all of this tension to what is going on and the peril that the human race are currently in.
Yeah, yeah. And again, it's also that angle that I've talked about previously that I always enjoy about Transformers, of just like the general everyman in the street doesn't care about what symbol is on the chest. It's just like, oh, big robot bad. And like Sparkplug, quite understandably, especially in this early point in the story, is just like, another one of these guys, get out of my face. And yeah, I mean, literally shotguns Cliffjumper square through the wall of the house, which, you know, if you're trying to rack up cool visual things that happen in this issue, like we're what, like 5 pages in total, I think, including the cover, and we've already, like, I've run out of fingers to count the cool things that have happened in this issue so far.
Another thing it does, though, and it'll be interesting to see if this comes up in the notes a bit later and such, but it also establishes... So, hang on, find the right words here. We've seen in past issues how, for example, police officers have been firing guns at the giant Transformers and they do absolutely nothing. But now you've got a tiny, basically almost human-sized Transformer, and a human weapon can do that to one of them.
Yeah.
It really helps set the parameters of how big and strong and impactful all these different elements are.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's, yeah, like, you know, Cliffjumper versus shotgun. But again, like, you know, the outcome is just, it's just like, ow. It's just like, you know, it's like he's gotten a really good slap, but it's not gonna stop him for very long.
We then go to the Ark, and we see an irritated Starscream berating Soundwave for not fixing Teletran 1, which was destroyed in the first issue. Soundwave tells him that while they have enough energon, the raw materials that they have gathered aren't advanced enough, I'll get there in the end, to repair the computer. When Soundwave begins to mention that Megatron would do, Starscream just slaps him without missing a beat, quite literally, and just says, "I told you, do not say his name." And it's the second time this has happened now in the context of the story, Andy. Not the, perhaps the physical side of it, but the fact that Starscream has just said, "Don't mention his name." So yeah, we know that from what we've encountered in the past, be it comics or cartoons and such, Starscream and Megatron has always been that bristly history, if you will. But clearly Starscream is taking full advantage of this, that Megatron is not there.
Yeah, well, it's kind of interesting because it does feel like it's a step up from that. I mean, A, I just really enjoy, like, petulant Starscream. Like, I thought he said it'd be fixed by now, and just, like, being kind of very Starscream and kind of whiny about, like, why isn't this working yet? But, yeah, like, it feels like, because normally it's sort of, especially cartoon Starscream is always kind of just, like, you know, he never, like, failed to mention Megatron by name, because he was always like, even when Megatron wasn't around, he was always like bringing up Megatron in terms of like, but I'm doing this better than him. So it's an interesting twist that he's just like, no, we don't talk about Megatron. So yeah, like it's an interesting dynamic, and again, it sort of sets up some interesting stuff there with between him and Soundwave, because again, prior continuity, you know, Soundwave is always sort of the loyal companion, you know, I mean, holding hands with Galvatron, etc., etc. So, you know, that's an interesting angle, you know, especially now, you know, Soundwave's had a Gundam-style slap from Starscream. You know, that's the whole thing.
Not put two and two together on that.
And yeah, like I got Gundam vibes from that. It's the classic Gundam slap.
Bright Noah slap from the OG Gundam series.
Exactly. So yeah, like all of that is really good. And then Skywarp. Like, that panel just absolutely slayed me, because we go from all of this and it's just Skywarp just sipping on some energon, chilling, just sat back in his reclining chair being like, "Carry on, guys, this is fun."
He's like, "Hey, I'm fine, you carry on."
Yeah, it's just like his it's just like completely neutral expression of just like, just having my drink, just, I'm not here. There's Starscream just like, "I'm busy. Can you do something?"
Yeah, because that's a good little segue there, because the reason that Skywarp comes into the conversation is that Soundwave receives an alert from Laserbeak and Starscream then orders Skywarp to deal with it. And the exact line he uses is, "I'm busy, deal with this."
Yeah, and Skywarp's like response, because it's just like, Skywarp is like, "What now?" And it's just like, again, all of these like character dynamics are already just like, this one page tells you so much about these characters and their interrelationships and their personalities. And I love it. It's so good.
We then cut back to Sparkplug, who takes Carly to the veterans bar that we saw in the first issue. Carly asks why they're there, and Sparkplug tells her that the Decepticons are jamming all phone, radio, and internet signals. So they need reinforcements from somewhere. Inside, Danny and a group of other veterans have heard the explosions and already formed a small militia to defend themselves. Carly tries to tell Sparkplug that they aren't all bad, but Sparkplug simply responds with, "He's been in war. When the shooting starts, people die." At that moment, Cliffjumper appears in the doorway, and Sparkplug just unloads a machine gun on him. Like, Cliffjumper not having a good day, but I did like Cliffjumper's thinking here, because he kind of just creeps through the door and just says, "I think we may have gotten off on the wrong foot." And then it's just, I'm a good guy, I promise. And Sparkplug's like, "Everyone down," and just starts shooting relentlessly.
Yeah, yeah. And again, some really good body language in here, because yeah, like, you know, like Cliffjumper's just kind of like very pensively like leaning in and just like, "Guys, can we just talk for a second?" And then yeah, just a full kind of width panel of just him just like being blown back through the doorway by machine gun fire. It's been like, what the heck?
But at this moment, Skywarp arrives, which the humans mistake for Cliffjumper having called in reinforcements, and they both begin firing. On the outskirts of town, though, Optimus and Spike see smoke coming from the battle, and Optimus quickly heads in to intervene. With Skywarp shaking off the human bullets like they're absolutely nothing, Danny, the bartender, decides they need something bigger. He and Sparky pull out a bazooka before the bar caves in on itself. Skywarp then approaches Cliffjumper for the kill, but Carly tries to step in and defend him, much to Skywarp's amusement. We get a wonderful panel here where Cliffjumper is just beaten down completely. Carly is just there, and Skywarp's just laughing, and then just holds up his hand towards Carly with the arm cannon on, and it's just like, "Cool. I'll shoot you, I don't care." Just such a great moment there. But then, Andy, the next panel we see, which I think is a double page spread in the comic, mm-hmm. if I remember correctly, because for context, folks, I've read the digital version of this, so I don't have the physical copy. And it's just this excellent panel of Optimus Prime just driving straight into Skywarp. And I can't articulate how excellent this panel is, Andy. I love it so much. It's so dynamic and great.
Yeah, again, I feel like this entire issue is just me just reeling off things that I like as like visual language, but this is another one. Like, I mean, I'm always a sucker. Like, Transformers is always particularly good for this, of just like transform into vehicle mode and ram your opponent. And Optimus Prime is particularly well built for that, because he's very big and square and chunky. But this, I feel like, is the best version of this I've seen. And yeah, like, just the Skywarp's face, like, just the deformation, like, you can feel kind of the impact of this in a really enjoyable way. And then you get kind of the follow-up panel where, again, it's a really good, like, half-transformed panel where Optimus Prime is mostly transformed back into robot mode, but not quite. He's still kind of in the midst of it, and it just, yeah, it looks really cool. And it's, yeah, it's your classic, like, Optimus Prime is a badass moment.
Yeah, Optimus Prime is gonna fight, and he tells Spike to take cover while he deals with the Decepticon. We then see the two fight, Skywarp using his teleportation, and Optimus Prime bringing out the freaking Energon axe, Andy. Like, we've not seen that from our podcast continuity point of view since, what, the More Than Meets the Eye trilogy? The first three episodes?
Yeah, it's one of those weirdly kind of, yeah, like rarely used things in the continuity. I mean, also, by the way, likewise, like Skywarp's teleport ability, like it only ever gets very limited use in like the cartoons and comics up to this point that I can think of. It's usually like, you know, it's normally in his jet mode, he'll teleport from one place to another to avoid some fire. It's normally depicted as a defensive thing. And I really kind of lost my mind at the fact that he uses it offensively here and kind of like part teleports behind Optimus Prime just to grab him by the head and like pull him to the ground. And it's just like, that's a really cool use of that ability that I feel like I've not ever seen before. But then, yeah, we get the Energon X. And I also really like that it's not just an instantaneous thing. Like it has, you know, it has a charge time on it, basically. So like there are a good few panels where he's just in the midst of just like basically kind of buying time while he transforms into Energon Axe mode. And like whether that's a play on the fact that they're kind of low on energy and maybe that takes longer than it normally does, it's like, you know, it's like when you try to start your car and the battery's a bit flat and you've just got to hold it down a bit longer to turn it over. Like maybe that's what they're going for. But I kind of like he has to sort of, you know, bide his time a little bit and kind of skirmish for a little while before that comes out. And it's just, especially as like an old school sort of Transformers fan, you kind of know what's coming from the very first panel where you see his hand starting to glow. You're like, oh, this is the axe, right? He's doing the axe. But then it doesn't happen for a while. Like, oh, maybe not. Or maybe he's not going to get to use it. And then finally you get it like a page or so later and you're like, yes, there you go.
Yeah, and the teleport thing as well, it's just such a logical attack to have. For Skywarp, like you said, it's not really been used in that context, but even the way it's been drawn in the panel, which admittedly, I'll be honest, when I first read it, I was very confused as to what was going on. But the fact it has tele and then port across the two panels, when you look at it in a whole page as opposed to doing guided view, which is what I did the first time I read this, it looks just so logically great. Just the way it's formatted and laid out, it's so good.
Yeah. And again, I mean, So many panels in this like issue that I just kind of want a poster made out of. But you know, the end of that with like Prime with the Energon axe just kind of standing over a sort of battered Skywarp just looks so rad. It looks so cool.
It just makes Prime look like a complete badass, quite frankly.
Yeah, it really does. Like the lighting on that is just absolutely pitch perfect. Although unfortunately, he's only a badass for that one panel.
You ain't wrong, right? Because as we've alluded to, Optimus pins Skywarp down, asking him to surrender. But their fight is interrupted by Sparky and Danny, you know, the bar fighters, I'll probably just call them for now, firing a bazooka at Optimus, severely damaging his right arm. This allows Skywarp to regain his footing and blast Optimus back. Sparky tells the militia to pour their fire on both of the Cybertronians as Spike runs toward the wounded Optimus. And there is a definitive moment here where you see Skywarp just unleashing fury on Optimus. You get a panel of the bar fighters just shooting at them. You see these guns going off. And then the next panel you see is one of those very, very clearly defined moments where the background is just one singular color. And all you see is the body of Spike, and you can see a little blood trail coming out of his back, and you know he's been shot.
Yeah.
So well done.
Again, yeah, it's just like masterful from an artwork point of view, because you have like all these pages that are super busy and there's so much going on, and there's, again, talk about the sound effects, all these massive like booms and everything is kicking off and it's kind of chaos, and then suddenly it's just this moment, it's just like the bullet hitting Spike is just like this tiny little sound effect. Like it's basically like you can hear a pin drop. Like this is like a really good example of like using the visual language of film, but in a medium that is not film, because you can see, like, you can play the movie version of this in your head where you just cut all the audio and maybe you just slow it down for a second and then you just have the one little jump of like a bullet hitting him. And yeah, like, you know what's happened and it's just like, oh, now what?
We see Skywarp taunting Optimus as we see Skywarp about to crush Spike. But the way he's going to crush Spike, though, I think this needs to be noted, Andy. He's going to flick him. It it's such a great thing. You just see Skywarp with this maniacal face. Just crouched down. He's just doing the motion. He's just going to flick him out the way. It's such a good panel. And then Optimus just comes in and just basically... He does the equivalent of like a wrestling kind of forearm shot, just to the throat, casually, you know,
yeah.
as you
yeah.
do. It's yeah. so... We've said it so many times already in this recap. This issue is so unbelievably dynamic. Every page is a literal visual treat.
Mm. Yeah, it really is. And I think it's when we were looking at issue one, we talked about the kind of the wrestling side of things. So I think there have been promises in some of like the Q&A stuff and what have you at the end of issues, like, oh no, there are more wrestling moves in this. Yeah, like there's definitely some cues taken from pro wrestling as well, which is and again, I mean, that's something we've talked about like with the cartoon as well, where especially like a lot of the classic sort of G1 stuff was very much, you know, pew pew lasers at distance, and it was always a lot more fun when characters got up close and personal and it got like hand-to-hand combat. And this series seems to, I mean, this series has done both pretty well, because we've had a bit of kind of like, you know, we've had the odd issue one, we had a bit more of a like firefight from distance. But you know, it can also do this and mix it up really well, and it definitely helps to make everything very interesting.
Mm. Talking about wrestling reference, I neglected to mention it, but earlier in this fight, but with just before that panel with Optimus with the axe, like the really dynamic one, he actually outright does a legendary Japanese wrestler by the name of Kenta Kobashi's move called a burning hammer, which, if I remember correctly, in the issue 2 letters page is teased. Because yes, Daniel Warren Johnson literally goes, you should look up a wrestler by the name of Kenta Kobashi and his burning hammer. And it's literally in this issue. It's so great.
Yeah. So there we go.
That's your Jeremy Japanese wrestling moment for the episode of this podcast. So in a moment of desperation, Prime, trying to figure out what he's going to do next, just tears off his injured arm and uses it as a club to beat Skywarp down. And there is just this clear shot where Prime just launches towards him, swings his arm, holding his wrecked arm, and it just caves in over Skywarp's face. Yeah, so good.
Yeah, and again, I mean, amazing like 2-page spread of like Optimus Prime ripping off his arm and just basically just being like, enough of this. Like, I'm finishing this. Like, this just needs to end now because there's other stuff at play. But also like... Maybe this is my imagination. I feel like this is a reference to something. I feel like I've seen this before somewhere, and maybe it's completely my imagination, but the whole like ripping off an arm and like clubbing somebody with it, I feel like that is a reference to something in pop culture, and it's been eating away at the back of my brain because I can't think exactly what, but like there's something about some of those that opening panel and some of the shots subsequent to that of just like, I feel like I've seen this happen somewhere else before, which is a very specific thing because like it's not the kind of thing that happens every day.
I mean, it's not, but the first thing that came to mind with the ripping arm thing off is near the end of the film Ghost in the Shell, the anime, I mean, the original.
Yeah, but yeah, but she doesn't batter anyone over the head with it.
Yeah, but like, the thing is that there are numerous things in pop culture, like you've alluded to, where people just kind of get to a moment where they don't stop. They're just relentlessly just beating and beating and beating, as it were.
Yeah.
Just on a foe. And there is this moment with Prime, and it's almost the equivalent of seeing Prime lose it. Not because he's trying to win the fight, just because he has to lose it to just get his enemy down. Because that's the power difference in the situation that they're in.
Yeah. And I think that's the thing. Like, it's a really good sort of... There's a really good feel of urgency to that. Like, it's not just like Optimus Prime does another cool thing. It's like, it's very clearly like, this is not really the way he would normally act, but because of everything that's just happened, like, it's just like, okay, this is like dire straits. I need to fix this right now. And that really gives it kind of like a power and an impetus to it. And it's also just a really good example of like, you know, if you take the limiters off Optimus Prime, this is what he's capable of doing, kind of thing. Like, it's a really good example of this is why he's leader. This is why he's kind of as powerful as he is, because like he'll just beat you up with his own like disembodied arm if he needs to. So like, you know, it's a bit John Wick of just like, you know, he'll kill you with a pencil if you get him mad.
By the way, quick sidebar. I have just sort of scrolled down to like the references and stuff on the TF Wiki page. I will tell you what the reference is.
Oh, thank God, because that's been bothering me for like
a It may not be the one you're thinking of, but there is a reference here as to what it was inspired by.
But
I digress. So Optimus Prime then goes to pick up Spike, who is now bleeding profusely from his injury. We then see Sparkplug run towards Prime with tears streaking down his face and a handgun pointed at the Autobot leader, screaming at him to get away from his son. The exact lines being, "Don't you touch him! Don't you touch my son!" And then we see Prime holding the body of Spike, just looking down. And then he begins to transform and somehow puts Spike in his cockpit as he's transforming, which, fair play, you know what? Puts him in his cab. Yeah. Very well done.
Yeah, and again, that's always been one of the, like, the classic. I feel like the cartoon does that a lot quite readily of just like, yeah, you just toss him in there. It'll be fine. which, yeah, it's always maybe a bit questionable, but yeah, somehow, you know, looks pretty cool. Also, kudos to Sparkplug for not just saying, like, don't talk to me or my son ever again. That's where I thought we were going with that.
And Prime's words literally are, "Come with me. I'm going to save your boy." And then we see "to be continued" written at the bottom of the page.
Yeah, and also just like battered Optimus Prime in like truck trailer mode is like a really kind of like striking end shot there. And again, like the body language of that final panel is so good because like Sparkplug's still like holding his gun up, but you can see he's like wavering a bit and he's kind of started to lower it because he's just like, I guess I need to just roll with this. But it's a really good, like, it speaks volumes about his like uncertainty in that moment where he's gone from like, you need to put him down, don't touch him, to like, okay, I guess, you know, for whatever reason, whether it's just because you're a big robot and I can't argue with you, or because it's like, well, maybe actually the words that you've said and the way you've just said them means that I guess I should trust you here. Like it's a really good, again, perfect like final panel for a comic, apart from the fact that I have to wait for the next one.
So yeah, that issue, Andy, genuinely fantastic. I'm gonna go out of my way to get a hard copy of this issue because I want it so badly. I want a hard copy of it. So.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, like, if they were to sell, like, poster art of some of these covers alone, like, you know, they could part me from my money pretty easily. And, yeah, like, there's practically any panel in this issue I feel like I could happily just, like, put on a wall somewhere. Yeah, this is one of those issues of a comic where I got to the end of it and kind of realized that I don't think I'd been breathing for a little while, because I'm like, oh.
I know, right?
Because it's like from the moment Spike gets shot, like, you know, you're having the kind of like, oh, this is just a really cool action scene. And it's just like, it's all kicking off. And this is like, how is this going to turn out? And then suddenly it takes that turn that it does. And suddenly, like, the way that it stops, it's like you kind of stop with it. And you're just like, what now? Where is this going to go? How is this going to end up? And yeah, like, it's really powerful. And again, kind of helped by like the issues before, because as we've sort of talked about from issue one, this series is not afraid to kill off characters. And so when Spike gets shot, it's not a kind of like, it's like, yeah, if something like that was happening in the G1 cartoon, like, I'll be fine. I mean, they literally put him in a robot body for an episode when he gets hurt, and it's like, I'll be fine. Whereas here it's like, they might do it. Like, they might actually, this might be the end of Spike already. Like, probably not, but it could be. Like, wouldn't put it past them. So yeah, like, it's really, it was a lot, but in a very good way.
And even just that little cliffhanger there, this month-to-month release, while especially from your point of view, based on what you said before, is something you're trying to get used to and having to, poor word, but cope with, as it were, and be like, I just want to read it now. Let me get it next week, kind of thing. The wait for this, I'm already just like, give it to me now, for crying out loud. What the heck? The actual wait is really difficult.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely, 100%. And yeah, no doubt at some point soonish we'll have like a cover reveal for issue four, and that'll just make it even worse, because it'll be like, ah, it looks really cool, and what's happening next, and so on and so forth.
I mean, chances are the cover's actually already been revealed. Come to think of it, we might take a look before we end. But
oh, yeah, maybe.
But from there, let's get on to some additional notes, some trivia, as it were, about this particular issue, once again, per the TF Wiki. Continuity notes. one of these citizens' militia, Jerry, was the same man raving about seeing Jetfire in the first issue.
That's nice.
Sparkplug notes the internet is down, throwing the implied setting of the 1980s into question.
Yes, I was going to ask about that, because that's too big a thing to just be a mistake. Mm. Because, yeah, we had all assumed from the get-go that this was set in the 80s again, or at least I certainly had, because nobody's used a mobile phone thus far. Mm. Again, we just read into, like, the opening of issue one that it was, like, you know, flashing back to Sparkplug in Vietnam. But maybe he was in Iraq. Like, that was indistinct. Mm. So, yeah, like, the mention of the internet means we could be in the mid-90s, we could be in the 2000s, we could be in the present day. And that did not seem like it was an accident, because that is way too big a continuity error to just slip through. So, yeah, that's super interesting to me.
Mm. It's a very good point, actually. It sounds weird. I hadn't fully processed that as a note, probably because I was just so busy reading this thing, as it were, just reading the issue and getting through it. But yeah, that's a very interesting point now I'm thinking about it. The next note. While talking to Starscream, Soundwave can be seen cradling Ravage in his arms, shot by Optimus in the first issue. It's still unclear if Ravage is in stasis or is dead.
I mean, it'd be very tragic if he's dead and, like, Soundwave just still, like, giving him a cuddle. And also, Ravage is cool. Don't kill Ravage. I mean, I'd say the same about Jetfire, I guess, but, you know, don't kill Ravage.
I mean, what about Laserbeak? His neck, you know?
Well, yeah, I mean, that's... Yeah, but is Laserbeak okay? Like, .com, my new website.
So, Transformers references. We've mentioned this already, but just to mention it here. Optimus's iconic Energon axe first debuted in the G1 cartoon episode More Than Meets the Eye Part 2. Here's a little interesting one now, Andy, as a separate point. Skywarp swears, quote-unquote, by the soul of the fallen. Are you aware what this is?
I mean, the Michael Bay movie certainly had that. That was like a piece of lore. Because it's like Revenge of the Fallen, isn't it, is one of the films.
I believe that's one of them, yeah. So allow me to read this to you from the TF Wiki on a different page. If the first Transformers were Primus's disciples, then the Fallen is his Judas.
Okay.
At the dawn of time, he was Megatronus, one of a brotherhood of vastly powerful beings dedicated to the well-being of their world. But the Fallen would gain his current moniker by turning against his brother, Primes, and his purpose to pursue his own ends. Also earning the moniker, the first Decepticon, in the process.
Okay.
So this is a section of lore I am not familiar with, but I wanted to delve into that when I saw there was a hyperlink. So there is a lot going on here, and it's sort of part of the Dreamwave G1 continuity, is also involved in IDW's continuity as well. So the Prime Wars trilogy cartoons as well, there's something relating to that as well. So there is a lot going on, as well as the Michael Bay movies here, of where that could potentially lead to as a reference. Okay.
Yeah, that's interesting as well, because it's also like, yeah, the G1 comic continuity, like the UK comics, like they had basically like sort of Primus was basically the god of Cybertron, and then Unicron was like the devil, basically. Mm. And that was sort of their big lore thing, like when it all got a bit sort of quasi-religious. So yeah, this is definitely sort of a divergence from that side of things, which is will be interesting to follow and to see where it goes.
Real world references. Daniel Warren Johnson, DWJ for short, hides little references on the license plates of the vehicles in characters' alt modes. 1. The license plate of the police car that Sparkplug commandeered has changed, now reading Murder Falcon, the title of one of DWJ and Mike Spicer's previous Skybound comics.
Okay, fair enough. A bit of free promo, why not?
2. As Optimus drives into town, his front license plate reads DAP, which stands for Dua Power Bomb, another Johnson and Spicer Skybound title.
Right, because yeah, that one I noticed, but yeah, I did not get the reference.
Mm. It's a great comic catch. It's like a wrestling themed comic as well. So if you want to see more wrestling related art from Daniel Warren Johnson, that's the one to go for, folks. 3. When Optimus transforms at the end, his license plate also serves as Johnson's signature with a small DWJ23.
Yeah, I did enjoy that. That was nice and subtle.
The next point. I think I mentioned this already, actually, but just to read it here. The wrestling influence on the action in this comic continues with Optimus Prime performing Kenta Kobashi's iconic burning hammer on Skywarp, hoisting the Decepticon over his shoulders before slamming him into the ground headfirst. And finally, Andy, there are two references to the Gundam franchise in this issue. Firstly, when Spike charges into the battle between Optimus and Skywarp, the panel is framed to resemble a famous shot at the climax of the Mobile Suit Gundam 0080 War in the Pocket series, where Alfred Izuhara tries to intervene in the battle between, I won't spoil everything, but basically between the Gundam Alex and Azaku 2. I'll say that much.
Okay, yeah. See, that is a Gundam I've not seen, so that's interesting. And was the other Gundam reference? Was the Gundam reference Soundwave getting slapped?
No, actually. So.
So there are three Gundam references.
Oh no! Actually, fair point. Yeah, because we made that one. Yeah, good point. So, Soundwave slap 2, 3. Similarly, the scene where Optimus rips off his arm and uses it as a flail against Skywarp brings to mind Shiro Amada's Gundam EZ-8 doing the same thing against Norris Packard's Goof Custom in Mobile Suit Gundam The 8th MS Team. Daniel Warren Johnson also shared the original scene on his Twitter.
Right, okay. So yeah, because I've not watched that Gundam series, but I suspect I have probably just seen that clip.
Just kind of know it through cultural osmosis type thing.
Yeah. Because, yeah, there was definitely, like, I have seen this before. And I did feel like I have seen this, yeah, in a robot capacity before. And it may be that other anime has, like, parodied, you know, or kind of, like, paid homage to that. And I've maybe seen it from that as well. Because it is kind of a cool and iconic thing to do with your robot arm. But that explains it. I definitely, yeah, that makes me feel better that I'm not just going mad and that I'd, like, imagine people ripping off their arms and flailing people with it.
That said, in the other trivia section of this page, while it's not likely intentional, the scene of Optimus ripping off his damaged arm and using it as a weapon is similar to a moment where Apeface does the same thing in issue 49 of the Marvel series.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I mean, that's also that may also be where I've seen it, because yeah, like I've definitely read that, so I mean that might be it. That could be it.
So there we go. So that, everyone, was Transformers issue 3. Now, Andy, I appreciate we have a little bit of time, as it were, before the next issue comes out, but would you like me to quickly find a preview synopsis for issue 4? Because what would, all going well from a publishing point of view in terms of our podcast, by the time folks are hearing this, issue 4 will not be out yet.
Yeah, I want to know how many times Cliffjumper gets shot in issue 4, if you can tell me.
So, a little preview synopsis here, Andy. When the Decepticons attack the Autobots at their weakest moment, an unlikely new hero joins the battle. With human and Transformer robots' lives at stake, can Optimus Prime unlock the true power behind the Matrix of Leadership to save them both?
Okay.
That is your preview for issue 4 right there.
Yeah. And see, and the talk about, like, the Matrix side of things, that gives me, like, I don't know, maybe this is my, like, I've read too much of the UK comics kind of brain going, because yeah, there's some interesting stuff that happens with the creation matrix, as it's called, in that around Spike, and it's like, are they gonna do something like that again, because that would be pretty cool. But yeah, also, yeah, like, while you were talking, I did also look up the cover, and it's like, okay, yeah, cool. Sold.
So there we go. Well, folks, that's gonna just about wrap up this podcast for today. Hope you have enjoyed it, but next time, folks, bit of a different change, as it were. This may end up being a little bit of a bonus episode. It may be a numbered episode, if you will. But what we want to do, because we talked about it a little bit in when we discussed the first issue. We're actually going to delve into Void Rivals a little bit more. Specifically, we're going to sort of, I'll say loosely cover issues 2 to 6, but the kind of prime focus, no slight pun intended there, is we want to delve into the direct Transformers references that Void Rivals has been making, be it things that appear, that are directly referenced or are shown in some way. We kind of want to delve into that side of things, but we will talk about Void Rivals as a comic as well, because, mini spoiler, Andy, it's a good read.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. Like, I wasn't sure, like, how into keeping up with it I would be beyond the, like, oh, there's some Transformers bits in it, but, like, the stuff that is not Transformers is also pretty damn interesting at this point. So yeah, it's definitely got me on the hook as well.
So if you're looking forward to that, we hope you join us for that episode. And if you are a first-time viewer and or listener and you have enjoyed the show, be sure to visit starscreamspod.com. there you can find all the links to the podcast platforms in audio form you can find the podcast on, plus our YouTube channel is linked there as well, where you can find each and every episode we have done in video form should you want to watch us discuss everything that we have been discussing. If you want to find our social media, we have got Twitter and Instagram accounts under the name Starscreams Pod. Andy, with that being said, before we wrap up for this episode, anything else you would like to impart on our wonderful audience?
I mean, no, nothing really. I do have a question, though, as you're like the G.I. Joe person. Like, we've had like previews for the Duke and the Cobra Commander series in the back of these Transformers issues. Have you read those, and what's your vibe check on them from what they've shown thus far?
So my G.I. Joe experience, and you know what, I could suggest this to you off camera, maybe we, like, once every so often we should kind of do a Elsewhere in the Energon Universe type podcast, just kind of doing like little catch-ups or delving into other issues and stuff. We'll discuss that off air, but throwing it out there. But my G.I. Joe experience mainly stems from the original cartoon series, when over here in the UK it was redubbed into Action Force. Mm-hmm. Because yeah. Words, people. We may delve into that because it's a fun topic of discussion in itself. So that's kind of more where I've been. I've kind of read some comic runs here and there because I've always loved G.I. Joe. But Duke has always been kind of an honourable character. And the thing that the preview did for the Duke comic was it implied that very same thing. Always honourable, wants to just remain being on the battlefield, didn't want to avoid promotions. But clearly something happened. And now he's basically just been brought back into the fold. And that's kind of where the dog fight in the Jets, in issue 2, that's where that comes into play, where he's perhaps being taken to that base, wherever that interrogation is happening, or that meeting with Hawk, who is kind of one of the leader of the Joes. So I'm very intrigued to see where that is going to go. The Cobra Commander one, it's so Cobra Commander. He just walks into a bar, wants to get a car, so he just murders someone outside and takes yeah. it. It's yeah. a very Cobra Commander thing.
Yeah.
Out of the two, I'm probably more excited to read the Cobra Commander thing just because I love that character so much. And I really wonder where that is going to go. Because that episode, I think it was in season 2, if I remember correctly, of the American G1, where there was a character called Snake, which was outright Cobra Commander. And we got some stuff there. I'm wondering where that may lead to. Because at some point, the logical, we've already technically had the crossover now of G.I. Joe and Transformers, but one assumes that's going to come to the forefront in a big way at some point way down the line.
Yeah, I'm interested to see how they're going to tie this stuff together. It's always interesting. I mean, that was the one that kind of caught my eye just from the concept of having, like, oh, a mainline comic that's kind of based around the villain. Like, that's quite a hard thing potentially to kind of, you know, to pull together and make compelling. So I'm interested to see how that pans out. But yeah, and it also just, like, you know, a little bit more removed from that, it just felt very in keeping with this universe as well. Just like just splatting people, basically. So it's like, okay, yeah, this all feels like it fits together pretty tightly.
And also, just looking at the kind of the preview cover, if you will, in the back of the issue, I also noticed that it's Joshua Williamson who's writing it, who is a great writer. Like, his Superman run has been fantastic. He's done loads of Batman stuff as well. Has got such a good pedigree for writing, and has kind of been fronting a lot of the DC stuff in recent years as well. So they've got a big name writer doing it. But also on the cover, I do notice, I think that is the arc in the sky behind Cobra Commander.
Yeah, looks like it. So
So, I don't know, but part of me wonders, is he going to find some Transformers that maybe we haven't seen yet?
Is he going to find Megatron? Because we don't really know what happens with Megatron.
Oh, that's a good shout. Actually, you know what? We've been talking previews. I'm going to extend this longer now. Let me look up the preview for Cobra Commander, because I'm mildly curious.
Yeah, because I imagine there'll be plenty of, like... I figure that, like, at least the early issues of these are going to be pretty self-contained. Much like, you know, the appearance of Duke in Transformers. It's going to be pretty limited if there's any Transformers references in the early issues, but wouldn't necessarily be surprised if they get way deeper into that at some point in time.
So here is basically a one-sentence preview of Cobra Commander issue 1. In a world where Cobra doesn't exist, one man's sinister plan to utilize the mysterious alien substance known as Energon will send shockwaves across the globe.
Shockwaves?
Right? Right?
But okay, so that's going to be that angle of, like, Energon is the problem with a lot of this stuff.
Yeah, I'm very curious to read this, I won't lie. Like I say, I'm far more into the Cobra Commander thing probably than the Duke. I'll probably at least give the first issue of Duke a read, because I want to see where it's going to go and how else things may play on that.
Yeah. And I'm kind of, yeah, like you say, I think that might be an interesting one for us to delve into at some point, because, like I say, I have basically zero kind of point of reference for, like, G.I. Joe beyond kind of, you know, cultural osmosis stuff. And as mentioned at some point, the opening scene of the movie, because it's awesome. So, yeah, like, I don't really know a whole lot about that universe. So that's might be quite an interesting, like, kind of going in cold, like, is this going to work for me or not?
In fact, actually, just to deviate even more, I've just looked up the preview of Duke. I totally didn't realise either that Joshua Williamson is also writing Duke.
Yeah, which seems like a busy schedule for the dude, but...
So, per the preview for this, a limited series from Joshua Williamson, DC Superman, Tom Riley, The Thing, which is like, what? Excuse me? and Jordi Belair from World Tree, which has got bunch of sort of numbers replacing letters and stuff, that tells the story you've never read before. The origins of G.I. Joe and Cobra in a world grappling with the arrival of the Autobots and Decepticons. When Conrad S. Hauser, codenamed Duke, investigates the mysteries behind the Transformers, the answers will lead to the birth of forces good and evil that the world never imagined. Duke will be the first of 4 G.I. Joe limited series coming from Skybound, setting the stage for a fresh new take on G.I. Joe, Cobra, and the iconic characters that you only think you know. Mm-hmm. I like the fact that, and I'm guessing Cobra Commander is the same thing from the evil side now, that effectively they're going to sort of be supplemental things for how the world is, literally said it there, how the world is responding to the Transformers stuff.
Yeah, it's I'm really interested how they tie all that together in a way that kind of works but doesn't kind of drag any one element of that story down, because, like, especially more so on the G.I. Joe side, because it feels like Transformers is the centerpiece here. So, like, I hope they manage to find a way for the G.I. Joe stuff to work for that fan base and the people who are, like, really invested in those stories in a way where it doesn't just feel like it's second fiddle to the Transformers stuff. It's that feels like the challenge, so it'll be interesting to see how they go with it.
Definitely, and as mentioned, folks, on the next podcast, we will be delving into more of the Energon universe, because we'll be discussing Void Rivals 2-6, and also the direct Transformers references those comics have brought us as well. So until then, from myself, Jeremy Graves, from him, Mr. Andy Hanley, thank you very much for listening, and until next time, squish!
Bye, everyone.